Fill your cup and get ahead with WKGN. 1-3-4-0.
Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios in Knoxville, it's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio. Here are your hosts, John Reed and Bob Baskerville.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Happy Friday morning to you. John Reed, Bob Baskerville, Sam Beard. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is Friday. It is the morning show. Bob, how are you?
I'm good. It's Friday. A little sleepy. Stayed up late last night trying to watch basketball. Watched the first round of the draft till the bitter end. But that's okay. That's the stuff we like to watch. I'm doing good. How about you?
I don't know if that's the stuff we like to watch or not. There was a point at me at 11:30. I was like, why is this still going on?
My roommate came home last night from a little birthday party he was at, and I was still watching the draft at, like, pick 31, and he was like, you know, there's NBA basketball on right now, dude. I was like,
yeah,
my bad. I'm kind of a sicko like that. I'm just watching the draft.
Yeah, and the NBA basketball, it was just one of those, like, where you're like, oh, man, this Nuggets team is special. This Lakers team is sad. I was like, yep, back to the draft. I'm good. I don't need to see this. I know what's happening here. Draft went on too long. 7:30. Make the change, Roger. Move it up 30 minutes. Come on.
Just don't let them have 10 minutes to pick.
Right. No, you got to let them have 10 minutes to pick.
No, you've had 4 months to pick.
Well, things change. It's a fluid board.
Not really. First overall?
If you were the Jets or if you were the whoever was picking number 9 and you see the Falcons go with Michael Penix, you're like, hold on a second, wait, we gotta take a second here. We gotta readjust. We gotta fill some trade offers.
I'm saying like the top 3 picks only get like 2 minutes to pick.
Hey, can we talk about that for a second? Because again, I guess maybe it's dealer's choice. I have heard, and I don't know which one to take anymore. Is it Penix or is it Penix? Because last night everybody was calling him Penix. Yesterday, we were on the call with Jordan Dejani. Uh-huh. You've been calling him Penix. Jordan called him Penix. Guess it's just whatever you want it to be.
Michael Penix. I don't care. I'm going Penix.
All right. That'll be the morning show pronunciation. We got to keep it consistent.
If it comes out, it gets on record where he's like, hey, guys, it's pronounced this way, which maybe he has. Maybe he has. I just like the big Penix energy. Mm-hmm. That's what Desmond called him. That's what I'm going to call him.
God, that was a cringy moment. Desmond doing that on game day. Do you remember that?
No, oh, yeah. Don't. Oh, you don't?
That's what John's talking about. But
yeah. You know, he had a whole thing where he tried to sing a little song. Big Penix energy. Big Penix energy. And I was like, oh, okay. All right.
I was trying to figure out, I'm assuming it was on YouTube. I could never find McAfee and Belichick.
Yeah, it was on YouTube.
That's what I figured.
I watched it for a little bit.
How was it?
It was pretty good. I liked Bill a lot.
You watched it over the Fan Run War Room?
I had both on at times.
You monster.
I honestly had it on for the Titans pick, and then we had the whole thing went down, and I was like, yeah. I got kind of mad. Had to blow off some steam for a couple picks. Then I came back down to earth.
I had to blow some steam off, too. I was mad. I was sitting in there, and it just never brought me in. I felt like I wasted my whole night. It just didn't share the ball. It was like, hey, everyone's going to get a chance to come in here and do draft coverage, and just never got to do any draft coverage myself. I was ready, but it's fine. No big deal. Those guys were warriors. I can't complain. Marcus held it down. Tucker held it down for the entire first round, I believe. I left it like pick 24 or so. I assume they kept going. It was a long night. Good job by those guys. Marcus brought some food. Bear brought some food.
Yeah, it was fun. Those guys did do a good job, to the extent that we were sitting in the lobby or the green room, whatever you want to call it. We were all kind of like, man, when they need to have a little fun. It was a little too analytical, a little too serious. But, I mean, they had prepared.
They had it when I was in here just for a little bit. I could see, like, Tucker had everybody's breakdown and, like, every team, the needs, the projected picks, some stats about them. They had a paragraph on every team. No, they prepped their asses off. I thought it was just going to be like a hangout, ha, 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 this guy sucks. But, no, it was good. They had some sound in there for every prospect after a pick. You got, like, a 50-second rundown of it. I will say, like, you know, they dropped the ball on a couple things. Like, I came in here 10 minutes in, and they didn't have the podcast running.
It'd be important.
Yeah, and I had to, like, start the podcast for them. They forgot to do that. Like, it was, like, 8:20. Like, a pick had already been made, basically, by the time they actually got on. I was like, how's it 8:30 and they haven't gotten on yet? Like, what the hell's going on here? And, you know, my boy Dawson, producer of Overtime, I mean, he was out there straight grubbing instead of getting the show on and ready. Like,
I didn't know. I'd never met Dawson before. So I came in and I was like, I didn't know. I was thinking, like, okay, maybe, you know, I don't know Ryan's family that well, the owner. You know, I thought maybe it was his son, or I had no idea. I was like, man, that dude's getting after it.
Straight grubbing.
And then I heard you say to him, hey, man, hey, Dawson, I think they need you in there.
I told him twice. He's like, yeah. And he just kept grubbing. And then I was like, well, you better go. And I don't know him either. Last night was the first time I met him, and I don't know if he took it personally when I told him to make sure he washes his grubby little hands. Because that's what I told him, which grubby little hands is a phrase I use a lot. But I don't know how he took it, because he's in there grubbing, straight grubbing. And I'm like, you don't want to go in there with all that grease. And I was like, make sure you wash your grubby little hands and don't get our equipment all greasy is what I told him. And I don't know how he took that.
I'm with you, Sam. For reference, it was like big saucy wings,
big saucy pizza. Wings, and big greasy pizza. Yeah, it's just.
At least you didn't call him his grubby paws. I think that would have been worse.
Yeah, you'll get your grubby paws all. Yeah,
it would have been better if you, like, followed him. Then, like, where are you going? You gotta go grab some paper towels. Go.
Meanwhile, Houston's running around like, "Hey, Dawson." He's like, "Yeah." Houston's getting frustrated. Yeah, Houston got frustrated a couple times last night. That was the highlight of my night. Is I thought we were gonna have a come to Jesus meeting with Houston and G.I. Jake shows Brett. Brett had Houston rolled up by the fifth time. About an hour and a half, 2 hours into the draft, Brett spoiled the pick for us for the fifth time. Oh. After we had asked him. We'd asked him three other times, like, hey, stop. And he kept finding a way to do it. And finally, Houston says, what the bleep is wrong with you? And, like, didn't I say it in a joking way? And then there was just an awkward silence. It's like, oh, God.
That is number one rule of a draft party, though. Yeah. Like, you can't be the guy leaking picks.
Well, we did so good until, like, pick seven.
So that's when it gets important.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, like, the first, like, I think I even complimented. I think I jinxed. I was like, hey, great job, everybody, not jinxing the picks. Revealing the picks. I'm pretty shocked that they haven't been spoiled. And then, like, all of a sudden, they start coming out, and Brett's like, oh, my God, the Falcons did what?
Yeah.
They took a quarterback, and everyone's like, oh, Brett. And then, like, they're sitting there, and then Jack was like, Jack showed up, which made my night. I love Jack. He showed up. Sam didn't, but Jack did. And he's sitting there, and then he spoiled it because Brett, I guess, had leaked, or he had seen, like, it wasn't J.J. McCarthy, because when they said quarterback, it was like, oh, J.J. McCarthy. He's like, who? Yeah. And then like, right before it's picked, and then, yeah, Penix, like, oh, well, I kind of already knew. Damn it.
J.J. McCarthy's fire, man. He's shooting that one out. I saw Brett make an eye contact with you on the Brock Bowers pick.
Yeah.
So I knew before it even got announced. I was like, God, come on. Brett, stop, man. Just stop.
He did the whole thing because somebody was like, it might have been Bob, said, they got to go defense here. And Brett's like, yeah, definitely. They're going defense here.
Talk about the Raiders.
And I'd already seen it. That's like one of the few times I was on Twitter. So like, I just looked at Brett like, you're not fooling me, buddy. Your little game here where you're
they're definitely going defense.
No, they went offense.
It sounded like it was a good time, but I think I'm glad I didn't show up. That's my number one pet peeve of a draft party is having a pick spoiled. I would have walked out after three picks got spoiled.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was bad. Like, it management got onto him, didn't faze him. I got onto him, didn't faze him. And Houston lit him up, and then they tagged in. Then he came in here, so I don't know if he was spoiling the broadcast or what. But he left the green room, and then pretty much it was just me, Ryan, and Houston. At a certain point, we just watched. And
so was it Marcus? It was like Marcus, Tucker, and Will in here.
Yeah, and Dawson. William left. I don't know. I think Dawson left too. Or no, I think Dawson stayed. Dawson ran the whole board, I'm pretty sure.
And then Brett joined.
Then Brett joined and took over Patterson's spot. Yeah.
But
I mean, 3 minutes when the Titans came on. I just got forced by William. They made me feel awkward. Like I was trying to bust in. They're like, we're on the air. And I'm kind of like, well, it's okay, guys. And I'm standing there. And then they're just making me stand there and linger. So then I'm feeling like a jerk that I'm crashing their party. But I was like, I want to talk about the Titans for a second. Mm-hmm. And then finally I got on and it was just. Tried to loosen them up. I tried to grab hands, hold hands for a prayer circle. And
Marcus broke the prayer circle.
They broke the prayer circle. Well, it sucks because we're all holding hands. It's like, we got to take a break right quick. So they went to commercial, and he's like, well, do we keep holding hands? I'm like, well, you know, maybe. And then we broke it.
After the Colts pick, I came in. We were just trying to do things to maybe loosen them up a little. And I came in, and I was like, you know, I go, man, that Colts pick sucked like that. And William's sitting right there, and William gives me a fist bump and goes, just went right into analysis. He goes, man, I think it's a good pick. Latu is, you know, and I was like, oh, come on, man, I'm trying.
Well, actually, the guy that medically had to retire from football 2 years ago was actually a really great pick.
Yeah. Yes. It was interesting watching Marcus and hearing Marcus. He kind of took the A chair. He was there. And then I was curious how it was going to go once Brett came in, because then they go, you know, is it going to revert back to the bickering and all that stuff. There's a little bit of it when I was listening to it, but it wasn't too bad.
All I could think of was that was Marcus and Tucker's audition. I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened. We put two hungry for power people that have been kept in seat 3 and 4, and we gave them seats 1 and 2 in prime time, and they're like, hey, let's nail this, and then we're going to get our 12-3 show. That's Colin Cowherd will go away after they see our draft preparation. I think that's what happened. We gave two guys a chance to shine, and we thought it was a pickup game, but it's like the undrafted rookie that's trying to like break into the league. And he's like, no, I'm D-ing Devin Booker up. I'm double teaming. I'm playing really hard defense here. No easy buckets. I'm fouling because, hey, in case somebody's watching, I want them to know that I mean business when I'm on the basketball court. And I think that's what we did. We let the 3 and 4. Tucker wants to spread his wings. He got to spread his wings. Marcus wants to spread his wings and get away from Jake. And he got his chance, and he was like, boom, here we go. And I think that's what happened.
Sam, it's probably just as well you didn't come, because you're so chill. You wouldn't have gotten the ball at all if you were in here. Yeah. You would have been
asking for the ball.
You would have been just sitting here.
If I couldn't get the ball, you're not getting the ball.
Yeah, no. That's very,
that's kind
true.
Of the way I felt. Like, very I was somewhat pulling rank, but then like they just made me stand there, and I was like, this is awkward, but I can't leave. I was like, I can't leave before I get on the microphone. I was like, because if the video's watching, it's going to be so embarrassing of just me busting in, lingering, not getting to talk.
You had to stay on your ground.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. A little bit, but it was an L for me.
There was a vibe. I mean, when I came in and I did that whole, you know, trying to break the ice, and I was like, all right, guys, big fan, and they were like, yeah, thanks. Kind of a wave off, like, yeah, get out.
They didn't like it. They didn't like it. They made you feel awkward if you came in here, which, again, that wasn't the vibe I thought we were going for, but those kids worked their asses off, and they did a good job with it. And
sure did.
And I'm proud of them. I'm a little offended, again, that I didn't get to have the ball any, but I'm proud of them. They worked hard, and you know, I got a text said that they sound like Mel Kiper. So, there you go.
Fan Run War Room.
Yeah, Fan Run War Room was giving you the Mel Kiper breakdowns.
They wanted Mel Brooks. They got Mel Kiper. That's what the listeners were thinking. But they did some prep for sure.
Good job by them. And also, like, you know, got new subscribers for the YouTube channel. Got some kinks worked out on our end for how we're going to do this, you know, in the new studio and doing the streaming and doing the firing up and doing this extra stuff. So, like, it was a successful night. Sam, you said you were mad about the Titans pick?
Initially, I was. And then, you know,
I
slept on it a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Saw some things on Twitter, and I'm starting to come around.
All right, we'll talk about that after the break. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Is your home's...
All right, NFL draft round one in the books after about 4 hours. 4 hours in the books. All 32 picks were made. No surprises at the top. The first four picks I thought were no-brainers. You kind of wondered what the Chargers were going to do. They went with the best offensive lineman available, or at least the guy that everyone has been calling the best offensive lineman available for a long time. You thought maybe they would give in for a wide receiver, and then you see the quote afterwards from Jim Harbaugh where people are going to talk about us not having any weapons, but we view offensive linemen as weapons. And I'm like, yep, Jim Harbaugh's back, baby. Yeah. Now they got two of the best left tackles in the league.
He pulled his classic line to Ald on the phone, too. He was like, who's got it better than us?
Oh, is he bringing that now to the Chargers?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Whenever you saw Sam Joe Ault get called for the Chargers, your thoughts were what?
Yeah, my heart sank a little bit. I was real ready for Joe Ault, and I figured that was I just thought that the way that the board was shaken out, I did think that the Chargers were going to go take a receiver because they don't really have anybody right there. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think I was necessarily surprised by Harbaugh going to take an offensive lineman either. I think that was definitely in the back of a lot of people's heads. Immediately after that, I kind of started wanting to trade down. I didn't exactly want to force another tackle there. And I was kind of upset with Latham when we first got it. But then, you know, as some things come out, you see some reports. Bill Callahan says that Latham was his top guy in the class, so I'm going to roll with the guy who's you know, been a proven offensive line coach for years in the league.
You know, I don't want to come across as a hater. I understand, you know, there has to be some privacy and keeping things off the record, but the last thing I wanted to see Diana Russini was Bill Callahan's favorite player in the draft is J.C. Latham. Where was that at 2 hours ago? It's easy to say. I could have tweeted the same thing and just made people feel good. Like, it doesn't mean anything after you see the pick. Go out on a limb. And I understand she's a reporter, and you know, again, she's not necessarily trying to spoil the draft or spoil picks or leak war room information. But, like, don't come out afterwards and act like you know now he's the best. He's their favorite player in the draft. You could have said that 2 hours ago. And also, yesterday, I don't know, did everyone just get it wrong? Did they get played by Harbaugh? Because every damn person that was doing mock drafts were like, J.C. Latham to the Chargers, J.C. Latham to the Chargers. That's Jim Harbaugh's favorite guy. And then they take Joe Ault. Like, every single mock draft yesterday had J.C. Latham at number 5 to the Chargers. And then it was Joe Ault. What the hell happened there? Who got fooled? Did they just get completely duped by, like, smoke screens coming out of the Chargers camp? Like, is that it?
Maybe they just didn't think the Chargers were going to take the top tackle in the class and then ask him to, like, flip to right tackle, I think, is what they were thinking. They just thought that, like, Latham was playing right in college. They've already got a great left tackle with Slater. Maybe, like, try not to mix up positions. But clearly Harbaugh doesn't care about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they were trying to, like, you know, I guess possibly the Chargers are like, hey, we're good with Latham. If we can get to 11, maybe that's it. Like, maybe that's where all the talk was. Like, they love Latham. But then, like, the Vikings are like, we don't have to trade all the way up to 5 to get McCarthy. We think he'll be here later. I don't know.
It also seemed like the Brock Bowers to the Jets was kind of a smokescreen. And it seemed like after everything started coming out that they were interested in a tackle the entire time. So maybe teams didn't want to slide past that 10 spot and let the Jets jump them.
Yeah, like, I mean, it seemed obvious that they had to fix their offensive line with their – it was bad, and they got an old-ass quarterback coming off of an Achilles. Like, it seems like that wasn't kind of the smart thing for the Jets to do.
CBS is grading the Titans pick higher than the Chargers pick. And I think it's close, but I think it's what you said, Sam. It's the notion that they've – you know, Harbaugh's going to have to move Ault to the right side. You know, it's not natural, whereas Latham – was a right tackle, but so the same thing, the same transition. But again, they're grading it out as a good pick. And like I sent to you last night, Sam, Skip Bayless liked it.
That made me feel great.
Yeah, exactly.
I would also say the Chargers probably get pinged a little bit because they needed a wide receiver and they passed on 2.
Right.
to get alt. So, like, for them, it looks different. Like, if the Titans got alts, I think it would be a higher grade than if they got Latham. Because I just think people have judged him as a better prospect. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm allergic to J.C. Latham, apparently.
Did anybody see the interview, with, speaking of receivers, with Rome Odunze?
I came out of that a Rome Odunze fan. I thought,
absolutely.
I thought he looked sharp at the draft. He looked cool.
He's a dog.
He looked like he was walking around as if he knew he was a bad man. And then, yeah, the interview was kind of the solidification of that. But he
– just well-spoken and, man, he confident. He was great. He was great.
That's what I'm glad happened. The bromance between him and Caleb Williams had been blossoming. They'd been, you know, working out together, flying to the draft together, tweeting at each other. And I'm glad that both of those guys are going to be together in Chicago. I hope that's a good duo. I hope Chicago has them a couple of young studs.
I loved what he said. They talked about the bromance. You know, you guys were on the same flight. And he was like, yeah, man, I was just trying to get some sleep, actually. You know, he was just shooting straight. And, you know, I was listening to it in my car driving back from the gig here, and it was exactly what I was thinking, John, when I pulled in. I was like, man, I can get behind him. I like him.
When I saw him walk across the stage in that nice black suit, I was like, you know what? I kind of want the Titans to draft him. That's all it took for me.
Yeah.
So overall, like, you're fine with what the Titans did, Sam?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you obviously needed to address offensive line at some point in this draft, and I think you saw – you know, not all of them are off the board, but I did think you saw a little bit of a run on offensive linemen there, kind of in the mid to late first round. So I think you definitely, you know, you've seen that there's a lot of top wide receivers left on the board. There's still a lot of, you know, top players in positions of need other than that, and I feel like you just kind of got that tackle spot out of the way, protected Will Levis a little bit, and then, you know, you can kind of go and work from there and probably draft best player available, I would assume.
How does it make you feel whenever the GM comes out and says, all right, well, if you can't play left tackle, we got people on the roster that can. I don't know if that made me feel good about my number 7 overall pick, like saying, ah, yeah, we drafted him to play left tackle, but if he can't, he'll be fine at right tackle. We'll figure it out at left tackle.
Yeah, that gave me a little worried about that. But then kind of the more things I saw, like Callahan is also, he's flipped multiple guys from right to left tackle in his time. Like he flipped Jedrick Wells when he was at, you know, with the Browns, and then also Tyron Smith when he was at the Cowboys too. So I think it's possible.
Well, yeah, I mean, like that was the selling point for hiring the Callahan son, was that you get the Callahan papa.
Mm-hmm.
You get Callahan auto parts here, guarantee in the box, you're going to get a good offensive lineman. That's kind of what you were sold. So, yeah, you kind of got to let him cook, right? You got to let Big Bill do his job. I think they'll be able to move him to left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the Titans this year was they needed a left tackle and a right tackle. Now, if you tell me that you came out with 2 top 10 picks and you ended up with a left guard and a right tackle, I don't know how that makes me feel, especially if left tackle still sucks. If you look at the last 2 drafts, or were they at 10 last year or 11, wherever it was. But like basically, 2 top 10 picks, if you come out with a left guard and a right tackle, those aren't necessarily your money positions that you should be drafted in the top 10. But let's get as many good offensive linemen on the line as you can. Hopefully he can play left tackle. I trust that they'll be able to coach him up to do that. I wanted Joe Alt, but Joe Alt wasn't there. Like, if they had taken Latham over Alts, I'd probably be a little upset. But I'm not going to act like I know what I'm talking about either. Like, I'm just judging what people are saying. But you want the natural left tackle over the right tackle that's going to have to move. I think that would be a fair justification of it.
Seems like the big knock on Latham was just kind of discipline and, you know, some technical stuff, which is what you want to – that's the problem that you want to have if you have the coach of, you know, a coach like Bill Callahan waiting to be able to, like, refine those technical skills. So if it's, you know, some false starts and a couple holding penalties, like, hopefully that's just some technical things that you can kind of get worked out with a legendary offensive line coach.
And I got to say that I thought he looked cool too.
Yeah.
I thought he looked cool, and I thought he looked happy.
He did look happy.
To be in the Titans. You know, maybe he's just happy, hey, I'm a millionaire now. Maybe that was it. But, like, I thought he looked pretty happy to be there. And when I saw, you know, him be fired up to go to the Titans, and I was like, okay, I'm in on this guy.
every coach has something good to say about their player that gets drafted, obviously. But, like, I thought Nick Saban had a good little piece on him as well, too. He spoke highly of him.
Was that before or after Nick Saban admitted to tampering at Alabama?
That was before, yeah.
Did you guys see that?
Yeah, that was great. I love that.
No, I didn't. Elaborate. I did not see that.
Yeah, he opened up on trying to tamper for Toledo cornerback
Quinyon Mitchell.
Really?
He was our number one guy in the portal last year to try to get him to come out of the portal, and he would never get in the portal. Like, I don't know if that's maybe him, you know, saying, like, hey, we were trying to contact him, or like, hey, we had him on there, and like, if he was there, we were going to try to really aggressively go at him. I don't know. If you're saving, you could probably wiggle out of that one in the courtroom, but like, we know the truth. We know what that means. People are reaching out to him. Go to the portal. Go to the portal. He's like, nah, I'm good. Sounds like a bad decision from Quinyon Mitchell, but hey, maybe he loves Toledo. We'll continue draft coverage after the break. We'll look at the other picks. We'll talk about the Falcons. Going straight Falcon. They were the biggest question mark, the biggest, huh? Whoa! We'll dive into that after the break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Looking for a luxury...
Had me a couple White Claws last night watching the draft. Bobs were high. The Titans. A little bit disappointing not coming out with Joe Alt, but we had the two TVs fired up here in the lounge. We're jaw-dropping whenever the Falcons make their pick, but meanwhile we're watching the baseball team do their thing. We're watching the NBA playoffs. We had the computer pulled up. It was a nice little sports haven here last night, Bob.
Yeah, it was a good hang. It was could actually even – don't want to get greedy. We were like, God, we could use a few more TVs. But it was a nice setup.
You know, four would have been better than two.
Yes.
You know, not to put new management on the spot, but, like, you know, if you drop the two TVs a little bit lower, you could fit two right above them. The problem, I think, is that we are all running off of, you know, just the smart TV, the Rokus.
Yeah.
So it's the same exact remote. So, like, when you're trying to change one TV, it's kind of picking up on the other TV. So you got to kind of be careful. And that was happening to me yesterday. I was trying to mute the baseball TV to put on the draft. And, like, I'm turning one channel up, and it's turning both of them up. I'm hitting mute, unmute, and it's just rotating. I was like, what the hell's happening here? I don't really know. But I got it done. I made it work. Made it work. But it was a nice little sports oasis here last night, Sam. You really missed out. You really blew it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry.
The baseball team was balling last night.
They were. They were.
That was a beatdown of Missouri. We're going to talk about it with our Fan Run Radio baseball expert, Logan Quinton. Get a breakdown because... I don't want to say it looks like it was personal because I think Tennessee's just a lot better than Missouri. But, like,
right.
When you saw the quotes come out, Vitello talking about his time at Missouri and being trolled, you know, after his dad had a serious car wreck and those guys giving it to him, it sounds like he didn't really have much love for Missouri. It sounds like there wasn't a lot of love lost there between those two. And, you know, then you see Tennessee just come out and make a statement. It felt good. You know, Tony wanted to get some back on Missouri, especially after they got swept last year to start the season.
Yeah, no doubt. It was good just seeing the whole situation with – while we're watching the draft, we didn't have any sound on the baseball game, but all we kept seeing were just bombs, yeah. You know. I mean, started with Simo and then – I mean – good Lord, Amix home run. That second one was legendary.
Still want to go on record, Sam. Still want to see him do it on the road.
Okay. But, I thought about you after those two home
runs. Yeah, he hit two bombs against Missouri, and I'm happy with the bombs, but still need to see it on the road or at a big series.
Sure.
All right, we got Logan.
All right,
let's talk some baseball. Logan Quinton, Fan Run Radio. The 920 podcast. Logan, top of the morning to you.
How's it going, guys? Yeah, it's a great morning, a great Friday morning. I know you guys have a lot of moving parts. Talking to NFL draft. I was able to peek in and watch the War Room last night. Congratulations on that production. But yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm pleased to join you this morning and talk some Tennessee baseball.
Tennessee dominated Missouri. Is that just more about Tennessee's offense being on fire, or just Missouri just being overwhelmed and overmatched?
It's a little bit of both. I was actually surprised that, you know, Missouri basically threw their hottest guy that had been a bullpen piece, a leverage guy, you know, that we've talked about, some of those guys that Tennessee has and needs more of. And Ryan Matic, man, they decided to give him a start. You know, it's a little bit different for some clubs this week. You know, starting on Thursday night, you can, you know, kind of get creative or forced to do different things. That's the route that Missouri decided to go, and I was a little bit surprised with that because you see the outcome, you know, and now if you're Missouri, you pretty much burned your leverage guy, especially for tonight. And now they will have a guy going, Javon Pimentel, that he's their best starter, and he's pretty solid. But I thought it was interesting that, yeah, that Ryan Matic was their hot hand, but coming out of the pen, but they decided to start him, and he's burned for the night. So, but the Tennessee offense just keeps rolling, and, you know, they have so much production from the home runs, and it's got to be so devastating, you know, for a team like Missouri that's struggling like they are, and you know, they get down in a hole like that, and, you know, it just, the series seems insurmountable now for Missouri after, you know, getting off to a start like that.
Logan, can you talk a little bit about the pitching performance yesterday? AJ Causey with a great six innings for you, and Stamos, you know, looking really good in that opener role, and really just kind of talk about, you know, I mean, Matthew Dallas comes in there for a third of an inning, but really only having to rotate through two pitchers. Just talk about how big that is, conserving arms when you're here late in the season in SEC play.
Yeah, you got a great opener from Stamos, and that's what you're asking for Stamos, is to just, I call it a get me over guy, you know, get you through that first turn, you know, the first part of the order, you know, 1 through 9, if he can get you through the order there and then turn things over to AJ Causey, that's kind of what you're wanting. You got 2 2/3 from Stamos. He threw strikes, man, 28 strikes on 41 pitches, and then gave way to AJ Causey, and he was really good. You know, there at the end, you know, starting to get some hits there, but at the end of the day, 6 strikeouts, you know, and 6 innings pitched, limited the walks, and, you know, and then you're able to get Matthew Dallas. You know, Matthew Dallas was able to break the ice a little bit, kind of like Marcus Phillips did. A little bit different scenario, but, you know, Phillips comes in for just one out there against Kentucky in a tight game, a game that had so many swings, and you just needed one out there to come in relief of Kirby Cannell. But last night, Matthew Dallas was able to kind of – I thought that was important for him because, you know, it is an SEC game. I mean, the game was pretty much out of reach, but – for him to come in there and have that moment there was pretty special too.
Hey Logan, we talked a little bit before you jumped on with us about Billy Amick, some prodigious home runs last night, but the ones that struck me the most were the two from our catchers.
Yeah,
there was some concern about Cal Stark getting pinged on the wrist last weekend in Kentucky. He knocks one out, and then Cannon Peebles. And it, man, looked like the team went nuts for him on that one. From your perspective watching that, I mean, how important is that? Not so much the Cal Stark being back out there, but again, we're all kind of rooting for Peebles to get untracked a little bit. Love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you're right. Like with Peebles being able to get his first home run as a Vol, you know, this was a guy that, you know, came over in the transfer portal. He was paired up with one of the best catchers in the country at North Carolina State and Jacob Cozart. And, you know, he comes over to the Tennessee, a switch hitting catcher, you know, and he was known for his bat and hasn't had his moment quite yet until last night. And that was huge from the left side, a massive swing there. And, you know, that might have opened up a can of worms, you know, for to go along with what the rest of the offense is doing. But back to Cal Stark, I mean, it's for Cal Stark, man, we see the power in the swing. You know, it's there. Not a guy that's going to hit for average or anything, but he's a guy you got to have out there just because what he means to the infield and to the pitcher, his rapport with the pitcher. I mean, it goes back. I mean, it's just what he offers in the clubhouse, kind of the intangibles. That's why he's on campus in the first place, and that's why they lean towards him in so many situations when you're trying to decide, you know, who the battery is going to be for the day or for the weekend. You know, it's, you know, what he did at Kentucky, you know, just making plays like the back pick that we saw. He's done that a few times this year. And when you're able to do that, you know, it kind of adds up throughout the year. And then you mix in the intangibles that he offers. It's something pretty special when you've got a battery like that.
Whose offensive improvements are you more impressed with? Blake Burks from last year to this year's or Cal Starks?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would have to go with Blake Burke. You know, I talked about it on the podcast this past episode.
The 920 podcast. Go subscribe.
The 920 podcast. You know, there was a lot of things people were looking at for Burke coming into the year. You know, in terms of MLB draft perspective, you know, it's like, can he hit for, obviously the power is pretty elite, but can he raise that average? Can he drive the ball to the opposite side of the field? But for me, what stuck out coming off of last year was his batting average in SEC play and some of the numbers in conference play. And there's just no comparison this year. I mean, if I remember correctly, I think he was hitting like 225 or something in SEC play last year. And now it's, you know, he's a monster right now that the hit streak comes to an end. But, you know, he's going to get it back going. And it's been pretty special to watch. I think that I would have to go with Blake Burke on that one.
Logan, when you're kind of looking here at the end of SEC play, and, you know, you obviously got the huge series win over Kentucky, but they've still kind of got that edge over you in the SEC East there. You feel pretty good about, you know, hopefully getting a sweep this weekend with a not as, you know, not so talented Missouri team, but then you've got two big series coming up after that with on the road at Florida and then on the road at Vanderbilt too. Can you just talk about how important those road series will be, you know, coming down the stretch and maybe just a little bit prediction of what you kind of think you're getting from this Tennessee team with two big road series coming up in that sense?
Yeah, last weekend, being able to get that road win at Kentucky, that just, I feel like they're going to ride that wave the rest of the year. You've got Vanderbilt and Florida on the road, and, you know, it's, those teams are probably, I mean, Florida especially, just wildly inconsistent. It seems like they're hanging by a thread. But still, they offer some firepower in that lineup with Jackie Kags. And Vanderbilt been inconsistent too. They do have numbers on the pitching side as far as a lot of guys that they can go to, a lot of promising arms. But the offense for Vandy has been inconsistent. And then you end with South Carolina, which is a really good team. And I think that'll be an important series for Tennessee, jockeying for, you know, first, second, third place in all of the SEC, somewhere around in that range. If you're able to sweep Missouri this weekend, which they're on the doorstep of, you're at 15 wins in the SEC already. And going back a few weeks ago, considering what things looked like on the pitching side and everything like that with some factors going on there, you know, I was thinking that 17, 18 wins would be a really good resume and something pretty attainable for the team. But right now it's looking like 20 wins, you know, is in their sights and maybe even more. So, yeah, I think if I had to make a prediction, I don't see a backslide or anything like that. Even if you have something to that effect, I mean, you're still looking at a really good resume. But I think this team gets to 20 or more wins in the conference.
So keeping on the thread of looking ahead and getting back to this weekend specifically, give us a little view of the – we know what we're going into tonight as far as our pitching, but as far as Missouri's pitching, we know the offense is challenged for that team, but do they have any pitching of note we need to be keeping an eye on tonight and tomorrow?
Javen Pimentel and Logan Lunsford, you know, that's pretty much it for them. I talked about it on the 920 podcast that they've got two or three guys that they can kind of piece something together with and, you know, make a game of it for one of these games possibly, but they burned one of those guys last night, you know, in the starter role, kind of going with a wild card there. So I think, like I said, I think it's an insurmountable hole for Missouri, but they've had a really odd way of getting to six wins in the SEC. You know, they swept Florida and they do have a win over Kentucky, you know, and so it's possible they can pull one off, but I just don't see it right now with the vibes are so good in the clubhouse and the offense is with the firepower that they have. You know, you mentioned Billy Amick. And, you know, he had a huge night last night, a couple of home runs, 3 for 5. And I don't know if you guys heard the post game on SEC Now with Peter Blackburn. You know, he basically asked, what's going to be key for you? What do you need to tighten up going down this last stretch? Talking about him individually. And I thought his answer was very interesting. He's not a guy of many words. But, you know, he said, you know, just being out there and being with the guys, he said, you know, coming into the year, we had so many new faces. We didn't really know each other that well, but now we do. And to me, I took it as, you know, Billy Amick had a couple of weeks there taken away from him. And I thought that was key because Tony mentioned that last game before he had the appendectomy. He had a home run, but Tony pointed out that, you know, it was great seeing Billy. He loved seeing the fact, not just Billy hit that home run because he was about to come out of a slump, but that Billy Amick, he saw him, you know, pretty expressive in the dugout. He had a smile on his face, joking around, and Tony felt like that moment really kind of opened things up for him. And then later on that night, he's being rushed to the hospital, you know, having to have an appendectomy. So I've got a feeling that Billy Amick is you know, about to go on a tear here because we saw it last night with the offensive production, but the fact that he's able to, you know, a couple of weeks were taken away from him, but now he's going to be able to enjoy this last run coming down the backstretch with this team.
Coming down the backstretch, and Billy Amick and Cannon Peebles hitting home runs, just like we all thought whenever the transfer portal additions happened. We'll see how Peebles finishes up, but that felt nice. I thought your point there was interesting, Logan, because last year the team kind of went through a similar thing, right, where it took them a while to come together, and Vitello talked about that and bringing new personalities onto the roster and having them find their roles, having them find their voices and you know, come together as a team. This team's doing the same thing, and they don't have as big of a hole to really dig themselves out of like right. last year. So, like, it's kind of scary for the rest of the league and really the rest of the country if Tennessee is able to kind of get on a similar tear from last year just because, yeah, like, instead of sneaking into the regional, this time you're going to be locking down hosting a super regional. Let's say Tennessee finishes the sweep of Missouri like they should. What percentage chance do you give Tennessee of hosting a super regional at that point?
Pretty good. I mean, 80%.
Okay.
You know, it's yeah, and you hit it, John. That's kind of what I was going with Billy Amick's quote there, because he didn't really say it in so many words, but this just knowing him and knowing how the guys have operated and asking them so many questions and seeing how things are in the clubhouse, I took it as, hey, this is, like you said, it's going to be scary for the rest of the league because they're going to be hitting on all cylinders, it looks like.
So you think Tennessee rolls this weekend. Florida or Arkansas, are we all Gators this weekend? Are we looking at trying to catch Arkansas and catch Kentucky and win the SEC title? Because we still got A&M there, so Are we full Gators this weekend or no?
Possibly. I don't know if I want to go on record with that, but yeah, possibly. And I think it's attainable. Now, Arkansas, they've got the best pitching staff top to bottom, and their offense does just enough. They've won a lot of tight games, so it's going to be a little tough to catch them. But, you know, if Florida's going to have a get-back moment, it's going to be this. You know, if things keep going the way they are with Florida, I think by the time Tennessee comes to town, Tennessee could pretty much put them in a casket.
Sam, would you rather give me a gator chomp or bark like a bulldog? Because Georgia's at A&M, so, like, you need to catch them a little bit too. So Georgia and Florida kind of our allies this weekend.
Probably bark like a bulldog, honestly. I think my mom would be upset with me if I'm rooting against Arkansas. She's a big Arkansas fan.
Okay, well, don't make mom upset. Logan, anything else on the way out?
Yeah, I mentioned the 920 podcast. Just want to give a shout-out to the sponsors, Hotworks and Crumble Cookies. Hotworks coming up. Small Business Awareness Month is recognized on May 1st. Hotworks is going to be part of that recognition. April 28th through May 4th. If you own a small business, they will welcome you to try out the studios, the infrared workout studios. You can do hot yoga, hot cycling, a lot of stuff in between. They'll let you come try it out and help promote your business. So go check them out. 10839 Hardin Valley Road. There's also three other locations, Fountain City, one on campus at UT Commons, and Cedar Bluff as well.
Now you're trying to get us in there for a session, right? The three of us?
Yes, sir. We need to get this done, man. We need to, Russell Smith has experienced it. We need to get the Fan Run morning show in the studio.
We got to check with Bob.
In the infrared studio.
Got to check with Bob. Bob's the boss around here. Bob's got the schedule. I'm free whenever. Just let me know. We got to check with Bob and Sam. They're the two hard to pin down. I'm ready whenever you need me.
We'll work it out. I'll get with my people and we'll get back in
touch.
We'll
work it out. Yeah, hey, as far as the war room goes with the NFL draft, you know who to call if you want to do an MLB draft war room this summer.
There we go.
I don't think we want to do that. It's LDQ Sports, the 920 podcast. Appreciate your time. Follow his work. Follow the podcast. If you care about Tennessee baseball, he'll make you smarter. Hour one of the books. We'll kick off hour two with some headlines from yesterday. Stick with us.
Fan Run Radio is pro-